They tuck it away and run for it inside the five, and he's in for the Lions touchdown.
Barry Sanders turned around a defensive back about three times. Wow.
The guy is trying to tackle him, but he's got his back to Barry because he can't find him.
Here's a touchdown, Lions. Holy mackerel, what a run by Barry Sanders.
Detroit, there'll be a 15-yard penalty on the kickoff, but the play is not reviewable.
Welcome to another edition of the Roar of the Lions UK podcast, episode 268. That is Mahogany. My name's Matthew Turner, alongside Anthony Fitzpatrick, Ryan McCluskey and Ashley Soden. We here in Detroit, those guys in the UK. How were your drafts, boys?
Tiring. I am very tired after the last few days, but it's all good fun. We love the draft. And it's great that it's been in Detroit. It's great that there's been so many people there. It's been a wonderful experience. I've enjoyed it. It's just, yeah, you're coming back down off all the tiredness today, trying to get yourself back to normal. And, you know, it's the great wild wilderness now until the new season. So it's all, you know, all a bit sad.
I love the draft, especially the last day, because I like Rich Run, Rich Run. I also like Stump the Truck. I like the NFL Network watching at the last day because you get all sorts of funny stuff.
Did you enjoy the puppies, Ryan? Did you see the puppies, the puppy draft or whatever it's called?
I did. Oh, Waffles, the quarterback. And then Oatmeal that had a little lion's mane on. Like, yeah. It's a shame none of them pissed on any of them because that would have just
You notice one of them did on one of the actual volunteers themselves. They did. She had a big stain on the... She was trying to put a credentials badge over it. It's like, no, love, we can see.
if I was a puppy and someone's trying to hand me to Daniel Jeremiah, who looks like super clumsy, I'd probably piss myself too.
Before I talk to Ash about what we were experiencing from the outside looking in, because obviously your experience is the same as everyone who didn't come, even if they're from the US, obviously the attendance record was broken. We weren't watching the TV screens, so we couldn't really see what the broadcast angles were of things. What's the outside perception of how the draft went as an organized event?
They smashed it out of the park, didn't they, really? It's gone great. It looked great. There were many people there. There didn't seem to be any trouble. And, like, you know, nearly 800,000 people there. That's crazy. When like 10 people and a cow turn up to Green Bay next year, they're going to suddenly realize, you know, just how good this was on a sheer scale of things. So, but no, the outside perception has been incredibly good, incredibly positive, and everyone seems to have gone away loving it, which is all you can ask for, really.
Yeah, it looked great. Everyone looked well behaved, as Ant said. Like, everyone looked like they were getting on really well. No tensions, I'd say, despite all the frosty NFC North fans put together. As part of us, everyone on the best paper. And a lot of the people announcing the picks, like a lot of other teams' players, they managed to find guys from Michigan who came out and they just looked so happy to see our people there. Some of them, like, yeah, I went to high school down the road. Like, I don't support Lions, but, like, this is just great. The fact you all came here and, like, you put on the best thing. So, yeah, it's big for the city. And I know there's some cities that will never hold the Super Bowl. And I hate that. I think it's wrong. Because it just will happen, but I would like to think that it will someday get consideration to hold the Super Bowl, and whether that means Ford Field expanded, if that's possible, or like, but yeah, I would like to think that they've given a good account of themselves. And the combine, it's time to stop having the combine in Indy and move it around. You've shown now, bring the combine to Detroit. But Ford Field's perfect to have the combine in; it's $1 billion. So, yeah, I think they've done themselves the world of good when people often talk smack about Detroit. I've never been. I'd like to think some people have changed their opinion about the city as a whole.
Ash, we spent most of day three at the front of the standing area. We did the experience at the start of the day. What was your overall impression of the day as a whole?
It was pretty enjoyable. Obviously, the sunburn wasn't fun. So was the fact that those... I'm going to be controversial here. Those bloody Chargers fans who then announced the pick got that jersey instead of me. They had the hot... That's the only tension I had. They had the thing where they give away the jerseys. I don't know if you guys, people who were watching TV saw it, but they were giving away the new jerseys. First one was the oldest Lions fans fair. Second one, Lions fans come the furthest. All of our area were like, this guy's going to be a chance in England. And then two Chargers fans from Australia win it. seemed a bit unfair. And then they went up on stage and announced the picks. They'd already got free stuff from being international fans from the Chargers. And they stole that new Jared Goff jersey from me. Would have had my collection complete because I've just bought a Garrett, as you saw yesterday, the white Jared Goff one. I've got the black Kirby Joseph on order from NFL Europe. I would have had a collection of all the new jerseys, would look great for the shows. Got screwed over by some bloody LA fans. But other than that, great experience. Going to the front to cheer on our Ryan Fardy when he made the pick, finally. It was a great experience. And then booing all the fans as well, booing all the Bears and Packers and Vikings picks. Just a great experience, and I've got a load of good memories now to take back with me, and hopefully in the not too distant future, come back and actually watch a game at Ford Field after being on the turf for the first night.
Yeah, it was a fantastic day. I mean, my legs really hurt. We stood at the front for 5.5 hours straight to see Ryan Fardon, our own Ryan Fardon, make the pick for the Lions in round 6, our last pick. And I mean, I honestly thought that he'd be done with like the second pick that we'd have, and that'd be later on in the day a bit, but we'd be okay. It'd be like 2:05 or something. And it was at 2:10, so maybe it wasn't far away from where I thought it would have been anyway, but just, it seemed like a long wait for him. And actually, if we hadn't done all the training around, maybe we wouldn't have had a pick to give him at all to read out, because the governor got one and whatever. I thought his moment in the sunshine was gonna go, but glad that he got that. But man, I was struggling to walk afterwards because of like the amount of miles that we've walked through the city, and then just standing is worse than actually just having to walk around. Now, after the draft was done, we went to the Detroit City FC shop, got ourselves some merch there, which was really cool. Ash is sporting the away jersey from last year. They play in maroon, which is like my favorite color, so I was really kind of keen with that. Couldn't watch the game last night, unfortunately. There's a bar in East Lafayette Street where they have like watch parties, but that made it sound like it was close, but it was like a 10-minute drive away from downtown Detroit, which was a shame. But the day has been fantastic. Everyone's friendly. As soon as people hear accent, they want to talk to you, find out, I mean, why you're even there as a Lions fan and whatever. You had the conversation so many times this weekend, but amazing experience. Can't wait to come back. Continues to be a fantastic place. Right. We're going to get into the Lions picks. We're going to have a look around the NFC North and have a look at the best and worst drafts and maybe some notable undrafted people as well. And then we'll focus on UDFAs in a future show, although we'll give them a cursory shout out now. And I mean, they're still getting signed as we speak, so this may not be the final definitive list. Anyway, just to start off, if you can, like and sub the show and all that good stuff. You know what I normally say. I'm not going to waste time going into it, but you know it really helps us out. Let's get into it. Lions do trade up to 126, and they get, well, what was a really surprising pick with the offensive tackle Giovanni Manu out of British Columbia. He allowed 5 pressures and 2 sacks last year in the Canadian college system, played guard and tackle. He's played 6 games at left guard and 33 at left tackle. He's got a RAS of 8.83. He's 6'7", just a shade over, and 352 pounds. Got a 33.5-inch vert, 8'11" broad, run the 40 and 5.06, the 10-yard split in 1.81, otherwise shuttle 4.81, 3-cone of 8.29. So maybe not the most agile at tackle, which, you know, you do look at a kind of sub-8-second 3-cone as a sort of benchmark, and he's a little bit over that. But those are some impressive athletic numbers otherwise. Boys, I know that we were discussing before we came on that the amount of tape on him is a bit limited, but maybe we can just talk broadly on the idea of trading up for this guy. And, you know, that we were all talking about that we needed someone at tackle that we could perhaps rely on or develop. And that does seem to meet the need, although, you know, it seems a little bit rich, perhaps.
This is one of those moves where fortune favors the brave. Going all that way up to get him. Now, I remember rightly, he had 10 scheduled straight top 30 visits. People thought this was a reach. And at the UOC like Pro Day, like 16 NFL teams were there. So he had lots of interest, and they were there looking at him and the guy the Bears got. So there were only 2 people like they were really interested in. Everyone was there. Would he have been there later on? Maybe a round later. Do you know what? Probably. But am I going to crucify them for going to get a guy that has got 1 experience? Like I say, I don't care the level he's played at. Like I say, he was sports. That's totally fine by me. It's standard college football. that's fine. He's got physical traits that you simply just cannot get. People don't seem to be talking like, this guy is just as big as a Mary Smith, but no one wants to talk about it. Like you say, everyone's like, oh, look how big he is next to like the little reporter. This guy's got like 10% body fat. He's not chunky like a Mary Smith. He is built like an absolute shit brick house. His calves are like the size of my thighs from the pictures. Will he take lots to learn? Is he going to need a lot of teaching? Could he end up having to play guard? Possibly. Yes to everything. Do we have the best offensive line coach or one of them in America? Yes. Do we have one of the best offensive lines for him to integrate and learn from? Absolutely. Does he know one of our offensive line very well because aren't they distant cousins? Is he not related to Panay Sewell? I've read somewhere.
No.
Is it not him?
No. No, no.
They're just a voice. He grew up on the island. It's 45 minutes from away. So, and he also supposedly in his interview with, I think it was with Twentyman, he did mention that seeing Penne get drafted inspired him on his journey. So he says, while I was in college, I watched Sewell's draft day process. It was basically a blog of his whole day of being drafted. And I remember he ended the blog by saying, any Polynesian kids out there? And he named all the islands. And I remember he said Tonga. And he said, if you kids out there want to make it to the NFL, you can truly make it if you put your mind to it. And that was in his second year of college and it pushed him on. And now he gets to play with this guy that's inspired him. So as you say, great offense line into it. And we had it with Hal for Sewell. Now Sewell can take on that sort of mentorship role. And yeah,
I love position it. Of need. Like I say, we've got Graham Glasgow on a 2-year deal, but Graham's already, 33? Will he see out both years? Taylor Decker, a big decision is going to have to be made in a year. Do you give him a contract he retires on? Does he call it a day after this year? Well, very possible. Might not even see an extension. Like I say, he may just go like, I want to go out on a high this year, and I wouldn't blame him. So, yeah, like I say, next year, that would be a question for Sewell, Manu, like say left right tackle. We could have a lot of worse problems. If I say, if you don't need to see the field at all this year, unless we cruise through the division and we've got like 13, 14 wins, and we're not playing for that much position in the playoffs end of the season, then maybe, like say maybe then you give him some snaps or a few drives, or you bring him in on sub packages just to get him on the field. It won't surprise me if you do see him on like a special teams, like a field goal unit as a big guy to block. So, yeah, they will integrate him at some point. Yeah, long-term development project at a place we need. And he just seems like a very likeable guy. The story is just fantastic, and I'm all for that.
Right, so I will preface this by saying, look, Brad Holmes knows so much more than I do. I trust him. Great. I hate it. I hate everything about this. I do. What we've paid for him, because it's a future third. Like, so we picked him in the fourth round, but you're giving up a pick that's technically higher for next year. And for me, it's just what we've done with our defensive, our offensive line depth. Now we are picking guys who potentially could be great. Like with Sawsdall, we're picking guys potentially got very high ceilings, but we're picking guys whose floors are so low, where everything could just fall out from under you. And that's not the kind of pick I want to be making here. We are potentially going to have a lot of problems on the line next year, depending on health, contracts, all these situations. You wanted to be in a position where you were going to be able to draft guys who this time next year might be able to step into this team in a starter role and negate this, or at least be able to contribute heavily. As Ryan says, this is a very long-term development project with him. I don't think you're going to see him in the field next year that much, let alone this year. And if Decker doesn't come back next year, if whatever, you are still leaving yourself then a position to fill next year, because I just don't think he's going to be ready at this point. And then Sawsdall, we've still got to wait to see what happens with Sawsdall. The other guy we drafted later, I think that's a lot better, but this is way too rich for a guy who's going to require a hell of a lot of development and a hell of a lot of things to go right for this to work. Because as much as we love Hank, as much as we love this team, the one thing they haven't done yet, they have not developed a day three pick for the offensive line. They have worked with round one guys, round three guys. They've developed those. We have yet to develop a guy out of day three to play significant snaps on our line. And that's something they've got to prove they can do. Like with Sawstall, that experiment's coming into year two now. We're going to need to see that get a lot better this year. We're going to need to see much improvement. So, no. I look around. There were other guys around there who, for me, I liked more, who have higher floors, who have the same ability going forward. I'm not a fan of it. But as I say, I'm not Brad. Brad sees things that the rest of us don't. So, you know, he's aligned now. Very, very happy for him personally. Going to back him all the way here. But I just, yeah, I don't like it. And that's just my own personal thing with it.
Yeah, I'm kind of
as well that if Hank has another good year, the chances of Hank Fraley being here next year are little to none, I think, with another good year. I genuinely think next year it could be the year he decides to move on. There was chats wanting to both see this year. Some teams wanted to have him a look, didn't they, as a coordinator? I don't know. I feel like that'll build over the year what he might consider being an LC, even if he's not one. So, yeah, I do understand, and I think that's a very fair thing. It's that in the back of their minds, they might have been thinking, well, we're going to get a compensation for Jackson so I can afford to give away a pick next year because we'll get an extra pick. So it kind of lessens that. But yeah, it's bad. It's a lot to give away.
Moving I think
an entire round with Lindsay.
I mean, not unlike the Swift trade in a way, in terms of rounds and how long to wait for it in terms of value. I know that's a kind of weird comp in terms of the value situation.
It was the exact pick, so the pick we gave away is the pick we got from the Swift trade.
Yeah, so I don't know. It's one of those things where I think it reflects potentially a perceived weakness outside of round two in the tackle position. I know there were other tackles to take, but I do think that the ceiling on those tackles, I would have said, was fairly low, even if the floor was higher. I think that you could have picked someone else, to Ant's point, and maybe they'd end up having a better career. But I don't think, apart from maybe the absolute best case scenario, that any of those guys would be like a top 10 left tackle or something in the NFL. Like, I just don't think that's going to happen. So maybe even in that case, you're still looking to upgrade from one of the other guys that you could have taken here. So in this area, I think you're taking a swing at not having to take another swing. But I do agree that I think it's, even if the draft pool was potentially weaker on day three than it has been in previous years, that this is a bit rich for me too. That it's just, okay, if it's weak at tackle, punt on the position rather than doing this and just pick another contributor. Not to say that Manu won't contribute this year, because I don't think he's going to be playing tackle anytime soon, but there's no reason why we can't just teach him how to be a sixth offensive lineman. We use them a lot, and if he's that fast, get to a man, make this block, move on, and just have four or five plays for him where he can do that, because I don't think that's going to take a lot of coaching to do, and that's a really important role. So I think we can get him on the field that way. Special teams, as Ryan said, it won't be a dud year one, but I think you're looking at maybe year four before you can even think about this guy as a starter, and it's just too much to give up for that.
Yeah, so I guess I'm kind of a bit higher on it, like in terms of everything, because I know it was given a preferred round pick, but that's just how things work. So every year you go one, things go a year higher, so that third round pick is equitable to a fourth rounder this year in terms of trade value charts, so it kind of made sense. But yeah, it seems we are caught shooting for upside, because I'm looking through now tackles after, there's not many, but it's Christian Jones from Texas, there's Tyler Grable from UCF, there's a couple of guys there who definitely would have given us a higher floor. But I think because, well, I remember Hank came in 2020, he has worked with non-first round guys. He obviously developed Jonah Jackson into being who he is, enough to get that big contract from the Rams. It does seem a kind of balance of, it's not even our pick technically we gave up, it's Philadelphia's we got from DeAndre Swift. We are playing the comp game a bit more now in terms of contracts, so we might get a third from Jonah. It's those kind of things where Brad kind of, it's a mix of all the things. It's like last year with Gibbs where it was said, Brad said, oh yeah, he wouldn't have been there much longer. He basically insinuated with Manu and with the guy we're going to come on to in a minute, our next pick, they both would have gone pretty soon afterwards. So it's kind of one of those where the cost, sort of the cost risk evaluation for Brad was just enough to make that sort of jump. It could totally fail. He could just completely bust. But at the point we are now with our offensive line, where we have Decker, we have Saul, who's going to be here for a damn long time, we kind of can maybe afford to give him that time to develop. And then next year, if Decker does move on, we should, still probably will need to look for a tackle. But then at least we've got that sort of upside that if Manu does turn out to be the next Jordan Mailata, our offensive line's just going to keep churning over. So I'm kind of more on the fence with it, where like I can see the positives and the negatives, but I'm not going to say I hate it right now, and I can't say I absolutely love it. I remember when it happened, like my reaction with Matt, we were like, what? So it's just one of them.
Yeah. Let's move on to our next pick, another trade up for the Lions for running back / safety, Sione Vaki. Sione? I don't know.
Sione.
Thank you very much. So two-way player for Utah. He is just a shade over 5'11", 210, 20 on the bench, 39.5-inch vert and 10'5" broad. Ran a 4.62 in the 40 on a 1.56 10-yard split, 4.28 on the shuttle, 7.16 on the three cone. That's as a safety that he's ranked on RAS, which is a 7.94. As a running back, I suspect it might be a bit higher with that weight and on the bench and the explosion. You can do that for me while I talk about what he's done this year. So at safety, played 12 games, 51 tackles, 8.5 tackles for a loss, 2 sacks, an interception and 2 passes defended. As a running back, he had 42 carries for 317 yards. That's 7.5 yards per run and 2 touchdowns. He also had 11 receptions for 203 yards. That's 18.5 yards per catch and 3 touchdowns. So very productive on both sides of the ball. It's exactly the same RAS score for a safety as it is for a running back. Fantastic. Yeah, good stuff. Okay, fine. So really intriguing player. It came out after he was drafted that he had several meetings with the Lions, and all of them were with Ben Johnson. So it does appear as though they are very much looking at him as a running back with safety versatility rather than the other way around, even though he's been a safety throughout his career. And running back, he only really started doing this season. But they're very much looking at him for that. And it also looks like they're very high on him on the return game as well. Boys, have you seen much from him? I know that he was obviously very highly linked to us through the draft process. So give us your thoughts on Vaki.
He's not a safety. He won't play safety. He won't play single snap on defense in Detroit. They've drafted him to be a running back. He's joined the running back room. And for me, I know people don't like that. I've seen a mixed opinions on Twitter. He is not playing defense. He's no longer a two-way player. They will undo it. He's a very dynamic athlete. He takes out the snaps out of the backfield, like jet sweeps. He's played wildcat. He's a brilliant, dynamic playmaker in the backfield. Honestly, I think he was wasted at safety. Played really well, but they had Cole Bishop, who I loved. They didn't need Vaki at safety a lot of time. I think he should have got more touches at running back, because frankly, their running back room kind of sucked. Jaquindon Jackson was crap this year. I say he struggled, I say, at times. I would have given him a lot more touch on the offensive side of the ball. And I think he's going to be challenging for punt and kick return, especially on the kick returns with the new rules. This is definitely a reason it went up. I like this move. It's aggressive. As Brad would call him, he's a football player. He's not a running back. He's just a pure football player. He's going to play in the slot. He'll play wide receiver. He'll return kicks. He'll be a running back. He will catch passes on fake punts. I've already called it. Jack Fox will throw a ball to him this year and it will convert for a first down. It's just, he's going to be Felipe's favourite, one of his favourite toys. And I just love it. Is it a bit rich? Yeah, maybe for a tweener gadget. But you know what? We can afford that kind of luxury for me right now. We can take that swing on a guy that could be a really dynamic athlete and threat. And for me, it's a threat to Craig Reynolds. And that's not a bad thing. Like I said, I think that's a great option to keep Craig on his toes. I don't think Zonovan Knight now will make the team. I think Sione will probably take his spot, and it's not a bam. But for me, just Sione offers a lot. He will do whatever is asked of him in any capacity. And you know, if you play running back and safety, you're tough. You can get hit and you can get up and keep going and you can deliver a hit. And if the worst comes to the worst and we lose our starting strong safety for the season, you best know Varkey's probably like, put my hands up and say, I will do it if you need me to. He is also that emergency. So, yeah, he ticks a lot of boxes. Master, jack of all trades, probably right now master of none. That's probably where I'm going to put him. So, yeah, it's a fun pick. It could be a disaster. It could be like, well, none of this is working. He can't learn a whole offensive playbook. He was just a gadget. But Ben Johnson's probably going to love him. And right now, I'm leaning on the side of, I think the risk out, the reward will outweigh the risk of giving up some capital to go up and get him.
Any thoughts, Ant?
I've done zero work on him. I don't really know. So I can't add any more than Ryan can. Certainly he knows a lot more than I do.
I love it for one reason and one reason alone, and everyone knows what it is. Special teams. I know he hasn't really returned much kicks in college, but as Brad said in his presser, this is a guy that's going to play on all four phases of those. He's going to be on kick return, punt return teams, and he's going to be on the blocking teams for them as well. I just love it just for that. And then, yeah, if we then need to build him up at running back because he doesn't have much experience there, we can afford it. And he's even said in his presser when he got picked that that's how he wants to earn his stripes here, is through special teams. And I think it could work. Like, I think I saw that he led the Pac-12 7.21 yards per route ran. That's insane. Like, as a receiving option, like, as much as we love Craig for special teams, he's done decently well there on kick returns and stuff the past couple of years. Varkey's a lot more explosive, can offer a lot more on offense as well. So if by the season's end he is running back three, Craig's gone to running back four, and then we let him go, succession plan sorted, I'm happy.
I don't like it. I just, it's a bit rich again for someone who, yeah, okay, the special teams stuff, fine. And me and Ant have kind of had this debate for a long time about special teams value. But at the end of the day, if you're going to have someone who's special teams and running back four, round seven's fine. Round six is okay. But this is just a bit rich for that. Now, him being a dynamic player as a running back is absolutely fine when you don't have two running back ones. Where is his snaps coming from? Like, how much experience does he have pass blocking? Because I want to make the argument that you'll either have David Montgomery or Jahmyr Gibbs as kind of round one, round two, as first down, second down guys, and then maybe Vaki can come in for third down. Well, that's great. Can he pass block? Well, 20 on the bench and those explosion grades and that weight is going to lend itself really well to that. But if he's only had 42 rush attempts, and I mean, pass blocking, then maybe another 42 snaps or so, that ain't a lot of practice. So
zero pass block.
So he's never pass blocked. You aren't displacing Gibbs and Monty for those snaps. So your value as a running back is severely limited. I mean, how many rushes did Craig Reynolds have last year? Yes, he had the really important touchdown late down the stretch, but that was one of only a few that I can remember. So there's upside here, especially Wildcat stuff. I think that could be really, really nice to have in your back pocket, but it's just a bit rich for this with lots of other guys on the board. I mean, I'd happily have taken the two guys below this pick at this pick. And then if this guy wasn't available later on, fine. There were other people who went undrafted I would have been okay with us taking. So I'm going to back him 100%, and I'm really excited about the prospect of what he can do, but I don't like the pick.
I think that's where I'd be at as well. It's what is he going to do? Like, it doesn't help our safety room out, really. It doesn't really help our running back room out. It's where is he going to fit into it? I guess it remains to be seen what is the plan for him. Once the plans for him's unleashed, then maybe, great, yeah, you can fit it in there. But I do agree with you a bit, mate. It's like, you are betting a lot on big potential here, but you shouldn't be doing it this early, especially when you're giving away you've given away two picks for him as well. You've given away the Philly fourth for him, and you've given away where he was in the, you know, you've had to do that to trade up. So this is two picks you've given. So that's a lot. at this point in the draft. It's my first ever kind of inkling. I mean, I used to get it with Bob Quinn all the time when he's smartest guy in the room. This is the first time I've ever felt like there's been a couple of picks where these are smartest guy in the room picks. If they work, they're going to be fantastic. But if they don't, then it's, what's going on? But it's part of a three-year process. And again, these guys get full 100% benefit of the doubt. You get 3 years, come in, do your stuff. Obviously, it's just how you feel when it's first done. So, but I think I'm more with you here, Matt. It does just, again, feel like you're just swinging too early. And I don't believe that there were serious challenges there for them. I think you still could have waited for some of these guys. But
yeah,
it is what it is.
All right, let's move on to the next pick, which is a defensive tackle out of LSU, Mekhi Wingo at 189. He's played in the league 3 years, 2021 at Missouri, and then 2022 and three at LSU. Last year, slightly injury blighted, but still played in 8 games of 25 tackles, 5 tackles for a loss, and 4.5 sacks. In a previous year with LSU, full season that time, 14 games, he had 46 tackles, 6 tackles for loss, and 3 sacks with 4 passes defended, 2 fumble recoveries, and a forced fumble. So, slightly more productive on the sort of defending passes, knocking things downside, but actually more productive this year on less games with more sacks and only slightly less tackles for a loss. So, he did have a slight uptick in terms of PFF grade. Always been around 73 to 78 for his career. So, very consistent, although after that first year, I know that people were projecting him as a first-round pick, and he just never kind of really kicked on. But for his measurables, he is undersized. He's just a shade over 6 foot, 284 pounds. 25 on the bench is about average for DT. He had a 31.5-inch vert and a 9-foot-1 broad, but very explosive and very agile. 4.85 in the 40, and 1.63 10-yard split, 4.45 on the shuttle, and a 7.33 3 cone. All of the splits and all of those drills are all elite grades. So, I mean, you should never invoke the Aaron Donald thing, right? But if you think of an undersized guy who's that explosive, that's the sort of hope that you have for this guy. But like I said, he's never kind of really kicked on from a good start at Missouri. What have you guys seen from his career? I mean, he did slip to the sixth for a reason, but he was kind of projected in that sort of late day two area.
Everything underwhelms me. This is the first pick I don't like because, so who are we giving up on? Josh, Broderick, Levi. Like, I know they don't all play the same position, but they're all fairly undersized. They're all like, say, interior voluntary pass rush. I just don't get it. Why? I don't like it. I just don't see what he adds, or it means one of them's got to go. We're not carrying them all, are we? Maybe two of them have to go. I just, yeah, it for me, it just spells the end of someone. It means, it tells me, maybe it's probably, they've given up on someone. Like I said, they've gone and reached for someone maybe that is undersized, okay weight, limited pass rush, tests really well, but for me, it's never amounted to really anything. Decent against the run, the grades are all right, but no, I just, there's a reason he was taken in the sixth. I don't dislike him as a player. I just don't understand how it fits on the roster or as a need right now.
Yeah, so I'm the same, which is surprising because we all know I do love my undersized pass rush and defensive tackles, but Matt can test this. We took the pick and I just turned to him and I was like, I don't like this. I don't like this at all. Like, I know he had the lower body injury that limited him this year, and that's probably why he fell, because the medicals weren't so great. But yeah, it just underwhelms me, and yeah, it probably means the end of Levi, personally, which sucks, because he was like our first second round pick, continued that on, just obviously constantly injured. It just seems we're moving on from him. I have been saying we needed another pass rush in DT just to rotate with Aline, because of behind DJ Reed and Liam, it did look a bit threadbare. So now we've got Broderick Martin as a sort of backup for Reader, and then Wingo will probably be Aleem's backup. But it just underwhelms me because he's got all the athleticism in the world, but not much has come from it. Like, even in like 2022, when he's fully healthy, six tackles for loss, three sacks, he's basically, and I don't hate to bring a comparison, because, but it's going to annoy you, because he's basically the less productive Braden Fisk, pretty much the exact same player in terms of like undersized athleticism, but at least Fisk was productive. Obviously, he fell far enough that we were like, we can take a chance on this, and maybe Terrell Williams, our new defensive line coach, can get something out of him, because he did it with Jeffrey Simmons, who had some issues coming out when they picked him in Tennessee. So maybe we can get something out of him. But yeah, probably means the end for Levi. And I guess one good thing from it is that we don't have to kick in Josh and Kamish inside as much anymore and passing downs when Aleem's not on the field. Just gives us that chance to use a more base end. That also limits them as well. Part of the reason we got them was because of that inside, outside, inside versatility. Might mean less snaps for Kamish. Hopefully won't impact Pascal too much, because again, that's another second round pick. Maybe allow him to kick on and just solidify that edge role before we then start moving him inside again. But yeah, it just underwhelmed me. Like, there were other people on the board, including someone that obviously I'm betting Ant's going to mention in a minute, as someone who could have took instead because he absolutely loved the guy. But Tyler Davis from Clemson would have also been a good pick. Like, it is one of those where I know we love our guys, and Brad and Dan and all of them must have loved him enough to obviously come up for him, trade a couple of those 7th round picks to get him. But yeah, just underwhelming, like B kind of pick rather than a smash out of the park that we usually hope for from Brad.
And people are going to hate on this, and they're all going to be like, oh, I don't know what about, he's a steal. Is he a steal because he's a good fit for what we need? Or is he a steal because of where he was on people's big boards and we just happened to get him so late? That's what some people are like, oh, look, we got him to like 60 places, let's say, after he was supposed to be taken. Like, they're not real, are they? Big boards are just projections. So he's not a steal, in my opinion. He slid for very much right reasons. I would have taken a wide receiver here. If I could swap it, I'd have probably gone for an offensive skill position.
I'm kind of glad at this line of discourse, because I thought I was going to be on an island here on my own for being negative. And I do feel like I've been very negative in this process. But again, I do a lot of work on day three guys. I get to know a lot about them. And I again, as I already mentioned, this pick, Mekhi Wingo, I don't like it. Because, and there's many reasons, but for the first and foremost, I think there were better guys at the pick. But, like, when I put it on yesterday, and yes, of course, at this point, I'm referencing Christian Boyd, still been there, and I referenced it on it, and, like, the first things I'm getting thrown at me, oh, this guy, he's won the LSU 18, he's done... The LSU 18 means shit. It's for an outstanding personality, embodiment of the program, great, but in reality... It doesn't mean, yeah, personality is one part. Have they got the talent to go with that? And his, you know, his talent, what he's done in college, considering that defensive line they have at LSU, Harold Perkins, Mason Smith next to it, they are loaded, stacked, tons of guys there. And the production's not really that good. Everyone's saying, is this, you know, blitzing this absolutely destructive pass rushing guy from the interior. No, he's not. I'm sorry. No, he's not. And one, he's got Mason Smith next to him as well, who at one point was one of the biggest DTs in college football. He was projected to be a fucking superstar. A guy who was getting a lot of double teams, a lot of attention. Mekhi Wingo gets a lot of one-on-ones, more opportunities to do things. Still not much on the board there. This is a guy who's played for LSU. And he's a number 18 guy, and everyone's saying this, and you're like, right, if he's so impressive, why is he there so late in the draft? What has 32 sets of different scouts seen that have said to them, actually, he's not worth picking before 190? I don't care about the Daniel Jeremiah board. Like, he's one man. I trust scouts and what they see. Nobody was talking about Mekhi Wingo as a top pick in a DT draft that, quite frankly, was poor in terms of its depth. There were a few really good guys at the top, but then the class after that was just a crapshoot. Nobody talked about Mekhi Wingo as being in part of that group there. There's a reason why. because he's not been that impressive. So you put all that in and then you come to this here. When you get to day three, I hate taking big school guys there. That means they've not fulfilled their potential. It means they're there because they're big school guys and they've got the reputation. There are far more deserving guys I look at, and I see Boyd there. Boyd's there because he plays for Northern Iowa. Not because he's not a good football player. Not because he is a disruptive pass rusher who's good in the run game. He's there because this is helmet scouting at this point. And people saying, oh, well, he's better. No, I'm sorry. He's not. His two teammates were taken before him. Like, there were two LSU DTs taken before him. He was the last of the LSU guys off the board. So again, are you telling me 31 other teams have gone, well, yeah, he's the prodigious number 18 where he's this all-conquering guy. Actually, no, we're going to take his two running mates first. Like, that tells you all you need to know, really. This is a perceived BPA pick. That is what it is. And, you know, we know they like to do that. Could he be great? Absolutely. And again, I've said all this. I will 100% back him. I want him to be one of the best players next year. I want him to be a breakout season as a DT, but not there. Not when you've got other more talented guys around there who also represent what you're about. I think you've missed out big time on some of these guys, no more so than Boyd. It's just, I was disappointed by it. And I'm not impressed that we've got perceived value for him. There's a reason he is there. And there's a reason 31 other teams have let him get there. So, yeah.
Well, I'll be the one to be positive then about this, shall I? Because we've had three bits of negativity on this. So I'll try and bat for the other side. And I do actually genuinely believe this. I'm not just being devil's advocate. So in the position that we're taking him, I think that we're looking to, I mean, rotate Aleem marginally. I mean, if you can take, I don't know, if we do have another three tech in the mix as well as a bit of depth, maybe not, I don't know. But maybe you're looking for him to take 30% of the snaps, not even that, maybe 25. And that keeps Aleem on the field quite a lot. I don't really like that. Maybe Pascal does actually still kind of kick inside a little bit or commish. But he can come and take between 20 and 40% of the snaps, which is, you know, a low load compared to what he's used to at LSU, which was every snap player pretty much by the look of it. And he has the upsides that is hard to find in round six. Now, I agree with that in terms of the lacking in what he should have done at college. At LSU, you should be doing better than he did. But at the same time, some of the production, yes, it lacked in terms of sacks. But when you think about DT numbers that we as a podcast really like, specifically a DT, one of the first that we look at is missed tackle rate. His is 9.1%. I mean, that is pretty damn low for an interior defensive lineman. Like, if you're looking for someone to rely on there with upside, I actually really like the idea of that. If you believe in your coaching, then you want to take someone who can be that disruptive guy in the interior. Maybe Aleem can take him under his wing. We've got the new DT coach to maybe train him up a little bit. He's got the athleticism that you can't teach. Can you teach him the rest? I mean, I don't think that his personality is an issue. And I don't think maybe the coaching at LSU is maybe an issue either, but maybe we're just a little bit better at that. But like other stuff that we kind of like about personality of players, and I know this will speak to you a little bit, he was injured since week eight, but he rehabbed and played in the bowl game. He worked really hard to come back and play in that game. We really like that. He was a team captain on the team. We like that sort of thing too. I'm not sure whether the other two DTs taken before him was a team captain also, but I think he probably only had one per position group. So he was the guy seen as a leader in that room, and he worked really hard to play in a bowl game, meaningless to him when he was in the draft process. So in terms of character, in terms of athletic profile in round six, there were maybe guys that will have a higher floor or guys from a smaller school that maybe deserved a bit more of a chance because of the production side of things. But in terms of a swing for the fences that also has a reasonably good floor, this knocks it out of the park. I mean, 3 years from now, we could be talking about him as one of the better DTs in the NFL. Like, that's not a stretch. That just means it switches on for him, because if it does, this is going to be fantastic. And at round six, you're talking about guys generally around the league who are at risk of being cut before training camp or after training camp. Like, late day three always has that risk. But I don't think Wingo's going to be at that sort of risk. I agree that it's going to be Levi or someone else, because frankly, Levi's had his time and it sucks for him, but he's not shown anything by now and it's time for someone else. So if it wasn't Wingo, well, it might have even been a UDFA pushing him, but that's it now, I think. Anyway, that's me on that. We've spoken enough, I think, about Mekhi. Let's move on to the final pick that we have, which is a podcast favourite, shall we say, of one particular member of the show. So, Christian Mahogany, the guard from Boston College. He's 6'3", just a shade over, and 314 pounds. 32.5 on the vert, 9'1 on the broad, 5'13 on the 40-yard dash, 174 10-yard split, 4'53 shuttle, and a 7'813 cone. So, right sort of size and weight for an interior guy, elite in the speed and the explosion, and very agile too. So, got everything you want in terms of athleticism. And you've been leading the charge for someone like Haynes or Mahogany all draft cycle. So, tell us what we're getting in our final pick.
I think I'll put it on that. I think we're potentially getting the steal of the draft. And now everyone who's just heard me talk about Wingo is going to go, well, you know, the same rule applies to him. Like 31 teams have seen something in him, which they've thought he's not worth drafting at this point. But again, this is someone I've watched very closely, and Mahogany has everything you want in a player. So first and foremost, you know, we talked about it with Wingo. He does have the personality traits. He has the character that you want, that Wingo does have, because again, he's been through a lot at Boston College. He's been there his entire career, very loyal to the program. He had a very serious ACL injury. Team stuck with him. He came back. Teams were offering him god heavy amounts of sums to move from BC. He didn't. He stayed. Like, I like that kind of loyalty and commitment to a program. And he came back after his injury, and he didn't look like he missed a beat. His first ACC game, and I hate to bring this up, Ash, but it was when they played Florida State this year, when they nearly upset them. And he didn't give up a sack. He didn't give up a pressure. Like, that entire Florida State D-line's pretty much been drafted this year. Like, pretty much. Like, that's the level of competition he's up against. Didn't give up a damn thing. Versatile, left guard, right guard, you know, technically sound as you will find. And you can just look at the collegiate system he comes from. Like, Boston College, it's known for offensive linemen. Like, its last two guards, one's earning $110 million at the Falcons. The other was a first-round pick just the other year. Like, this is a system that knows how to create these guys. And you see it by how he plays. The IQ is, like, beyond things. You can see him pick up late blitzers when he's double-teaming. He's, like, he's always looking around, looking where he's needed. Very aware, very quick to react, very strong, very apt in both sets of the game. I just love everything about him. And the reason he's fallen, I'm guessing, it must be the ACL injury. Because obviously, precedent was set this weekend, because it turns out Peyton Wilson, he had an ACL injury in school as well, and he didn't have an ACL left, which is kind of explained his drop on day one. That injury was a lot more serious than realized. The dude's played 18 months without an ACL, which is just crazy. But when you have injuries like that, it's going to affect your stock. I mean, but he played all last year. He was fully healthy. There's like Peyton Wilson. So whether the medicals have been a bit harsher to him, maybe there's something we don't know about. Maybe there is a bit more damage than we think, and it's going to affect his longevity in the league. That's the only reason. There's no character concerns with him at all. There are no technical issues which I can think that are wrong with him. Positionally versatile. Teams just got this one wrong, I think. You are getting a guy who could potentially be a starter in 12 months in round six. This is going to be a big test of the offensive line, you know, coaches here. If you get him right, then you don't need to worry about Zeitler leaving in 12 months, because you've got your guy for the future. Hell, if you want to bring Graham back across next year, because I assume Graham's going to play left guard, if you want to bring him back to his natural spot at right guard, put Mahogany in at left guard, great, but you've got a guard spot sealed up now for the next 5, 6, 7 years with him if you get him right, and you've paid nothing for him. You've sat there and just waited for him to... Well, to be honest, I'd forgotten that he was on the board at this point still. I thought someone would have just taken him. He'd be long gone. So for me, I think you're going to get a guy who you're going to fall in love with very, very quickly. He's going to be great, and we've got an absolute steal here.
This pick saved day three for me. This was the saving grace. This guy will go down as one of the steals in a couple of years. In a couple of years, people will look at Christian Mahogany like they do a Monroe. Like, damn, a lot of you guys let him fell. He will be a start on the offensive line next year at one of the guard positions. I will put that in, bookmark this voice note. He will start next year. Like I said, if he gets up to speed this year and you want to try him, don't care, that gives out some money. Three quarters away for a year, I put Christian in. I think this is, Kevin should not rest on his laurels. Just because you're a pro bowler does not mean Christian cannot come and take your job this year. I say he comes pedigree. Basically, you've got pedigree on the line. Great run game. I said they were a lot better this year. Stretched down the line, BC offense wasn't bad. And they did a good job of helping their really young quarterbacks here. For me, this was a great pick. And it embodies everything we need. And the guy will have such a big chip on his shoulder. He would have never thought he'd have been taken this late. He will probably be really pissed off. And what better position to have a player with a chip on his shoulder pissed off than an offensive lineman? And he could not have any better people to learn from. A long veteran in the league like Graham has played all over that. A multi-time pro bowler, and then everyone else take him under their arm. And like I said, this time 12 next month, you won't even recognize, you won't even realize he's in there because our line will just be effortless transition.
Yeah, he's a natural fit at that right guard spot for me. Mauling and mauler in the run game, good pass blocker as well. Yeah, Zeitler's here for a year, there's a ready-made replacement on a cheap 6th round contract as well to keep that conveyor belt moving in terms of money on the offensive line while keeping it a strength. Like, I love it as much as I obviously, BC are not a good program, aren't a good program past couple of years. He's been a standout for them. And yeah, this year, him protecting Castanolos, who is an absolute rookie in terms of college ball, protects him enough to get him time to make him look good. So this is just a great pick. Like, our faces when it happened, we were so happy it happened, and obviously made slightly better by the fact it was announced by someone that we know and love. So Christian Mahogany, hopefully you're aligned for life.
It's very hypocritical, but if we would have done the same trade for Giovanni as we had done for Mahogany, and we take Giovanni now, I'm probably like, I love all of this. And I know that's very hypocritical because it's the same scenario, isn't it? But if you just swap these players around in the positions they're taken, like I say, it looks totally different, even though it's the same guys. Like I said, I would have been happy to go up as far as that and get him because I think of what he can offer. So, yeah, I think lots of right players, just questionable positions, but position, like I say, they won't mean anything in a year, will they? So they only mean right now because I'm in my head, I'm in my thoughts, and I'm looking at it. This time next year, I won't remember where any of them were taken. Ideally.
I mean, I absolutely love it. The value's fantastic. I agree that he might start this season. Like, there's no reason why he doesn't. Played 23 games at right guard and 11 at left guard, so clearly he's got the versatility. Some of the highlight reel stuff that comes out, I mean, can you imagine him playing next to Sewell on that right side? It's going to be one of the best sides of an offensive line in the NFL in terms of run blocking. I mean, we're going to absolutely destroy teams with this guy. I mean, I can't wait to see him in action, man. He's exciting. And also fits the ethos, two-time captain of the team, first team away ACC, like... He's got everything that you want from a personality standpoint. And then you see the way that he plays the game exactly embodies what it means to be a Lion. So could not be higher on this pick.
And the best thing about it is he's also done some big man touchdowns as well. If everyone's seen the keg stand celebration after he rushed it in. So here comes another player for me to call for Ben Johnson to give the ball on the goal line.
And the childish ones of us can make jokes about wood now, so there we go.
Yeah. Right. At this point, because you both were not on the show yesterday, I just want to touch on the pick that we made yesterday. Thoughts on Ennis Rakestraw, very briefly.
I would have hated him in the first round, but I love him where we've got him. And for me, on paper, our secondary is now complete. We have got five or six guys that could all, like, if Mosley's healthy, we've got four or five guys that could both start at maybe one and two corners. And that's probably the best thing we need to be. Do we have a bona fide corner one right now? No, because they're rookies. Do we have a corner for bona fide roster on a rookie? No. We have got it's going to be the most competitive position group on the whole team is the cornerback room now. And that's probably the best way it can be. Two rookies that I feel totally fine. Neither of them are going to be thrown into the danger zone and left to sink or swim like a previous regime did to Jeff. They're not going to handle them like that. They're not going to leave them out there to die and then be like, watch the fans turn on them and chew them up and spit them out. Because a lot of us were guilty of that many years ago. They won't let that happen this time. We will. They will be wrapped in cotton wool. And if they are not ready, they won't play. They will just simply not put them out there until they're ready. But yeah, give it a year or two. If these two have, if everything's gone right, these two will be your starting outside corners. And they're both so good in their own game. They do not shy away from contact whatsoever. They are physical dudes and they will get stuck in. And they will, pound the pun, they will lay the wood. They will lay the mahogany. So yeah, I'm very happy that we've got two. I think it offers a lot of. It's just been so hard since Slay left. We've just been putting plaster on plaster on plaster over a big gaping wound. And now we've said, nope, let's go get a prosthetic limb. Let's chop the old dead wood off. And let's go get a permanent, fully fixed thing. And these are our pathetic limb.
We're not going to get a bandage for a wound. You went for amputation and replacement.
Yeah, we've cut out everything, and we're just going to go. Let's just go artificial.
The gangrene's been prevented, and okay, cool, nice. And I could see you grimacing a little bit about this, maybe, or am I misreading?
One thing I will add is Aaron Glenn is on a very short leash because we've invested so heavily in him now. There's no more making complaints. There's no more making excuses for him. If he starts the first seven or eight games badly, the gangrene, his head rolls. And you bring the guy in to work with this young talent. That's all I'm saying. So I will be very hypercritical.
And you can't get a prosthetic head, so, you know.
That might be the next name of the show.
See, the reason... I do look pained here, and this is because, unfortunately, I can't go back and delete everything I've said on this podcast because it is... I don't know how many times I've said this over the last few months, but I have always said that Chris Abrams-Drain is a better quarterback than Ennis Rakestraw. And Chris Abrams-Drain went at pick, 155, I think it was, to the Denver Broncos, and Ennis Rakestraw got picked 100 picks before him, so I would be lying my ass off if I just came on here and said I was absolutely delighted about this and it was terrific and it was the pick we should have had, because I'm on here as saying otherwise. And, you know, I'm not just going to move away from my position because he's a Lions player now. I can't do that. Like, I would be betraying myself and I would just be a fraud if I did. I still think Abrams-Drain's going to be better at the next level. I just have issues. Like, he could be a great corner. He's got all the intangibles you want to be a great corner. He struggles against taller guys. He struggles against more dominant guys. And that's why I like Abrams-Drain more, because he's also undersized, but he's a lot more clever. When it comes to facing the guys, he's a bit outmatched that. He's got the IQ to level up the playing field against them and still be able to make plays. Rakestraw doesn't right now. So he needs to work on that. His tackling is poor. Like, he's good against the run, but, like, you'll see him so many times he's, like, diving for ankles and stuff. Like, you're going to see him get hurdled a few times early in his career because he goes down low and the tackling's not great. That needs to be gotten out of our system, and it's something that the Lions, unfortunately, have had a difficult job of eradicating. Our tackling has always been poor, and that's one of his weaknesses. And again, coming up against some big guys in this league, Christian Watson, you're coming up against Jefferson. Those guys are going to give him issues to start with whilst he learns how to adapt to them, whilst he puts on a bit of mass and he figures it out. If he does, then he's going to be perfect for us. And I think we're going to look back on this and it's going to be a great pick. But again, the reason why a lot of people like it is because consensus board had him a lot higher. That I don't like consensus board. Like, it's just, it's a made up, it's a board of names, and it means nothing at the end of the day, really. Again, I watched the guy, and I've watched a lot of Missouri because I've been watching Abrams train forever and a day now. And Register didn't even cross the radar until the end of the season and the pre-draft process begun. So for me, I have issues with the player right now. He could be great. And like the double dip at corner, I like that. Like, I'm not going to disagree with the double dip at corner. Like, the new guys are not a sure thing. Carlton Davis, not a sure thing. Meek Robinson, not a sure thing. We need young guys in there. We need to rebuild that core from the bottom. So, double dipping, I don't mind that strategy. I will wait to be proved. I want him to be great. But again, this is just, I can't just throw away. I watch these guys, I scout them a lot of the year. I can't just change my mind like that. So right now I'm skeptical. I would just rather have taken Abrams Drain later on, and we would have had a pick to get him at that point, and I think we would have got something very similar. But we'll see what happens with him. But I like the process to double dip. But like I say, I can't go back and change what I said. I can't lie here. I'm going to stick to it.
Okay, and overall thoughts on, oh, just for clarity's sake, 145, so not as far away as you thought. Draft class-wise, do you think we did what we set out to do? I know that they don't pick for need, but, you know, we're going to have it in the back of our minds as people, and we do want needs to be met, even if we're not drafting for them. Do you think they did a good job of kind of filling the holes that were there?
A bit of both. They're preempting holes they'll need to fill. And on the defensive side of the ball, they're filling holes that I think we're going to have pretty early. I'd say Levi might make way straight away, so they need a backup DT. Two corners, you're throwing. We're going to basically have, like, say, a Hell in a Cell six-way cage match of corners, and two of them will emerge. And it could be Terry Arnold, it could be someone else. It could be Mosley, and it could be Rackestraw. And Terry Arnold becomes a backup for all we know. Like, it's the best way to be. You cover all bases, you throw them all in, and you see who emerges, let them battle it out in camp. So, yeah, we need competition in that room because there was not a lot to go behind Cam Sutton and, like, Jerry. You were relying on guys like Kendall Wilder. Now you may never see him. You might just see him on special teams and odd passing down. So, yeah, I'm happy with what we did. And then we've got projects on the offensive line, but they're always where we're going to be. The one position I would have liked to see in with a draft pick is a receiver. I still would have liked to throw a name in that hat. There are still some free agent guys that maybe now they may have got back in their mind because they didn't address that scenario. Maybe there are some people they might bring in. So, yeah. I'm a B plus on paper is what I'll give this. I don't like grading them, but I'll say B plus.
Very quickly about Mosley. I'm not sure Mosley ever plays a snap for the Lions again. I think the amount we've invested in that position, I think he's gone in camp because I think you guys like Vildor and that'll get the depth spots. You've potentially got your four top corners at this point and Branch. But I don't know. They draft their guys. Like, they draft the right guys, not the guys for position or anything like that, because that's what this draft is. It's just continuing to add guys they like, because when I look at the roster build, if this was for need, I would be concerned slightly about how this has been built. So our offensive line is our bread and butter. Like, it is what makes us us. It what makes us one of the best teams in the NFL. We've got one of the best offensive lines in the NFL. Great. But we have a fast coming scenario where we could lose two or three of those guys. I mean, next year we'll lose Zeitler. And then who knows what's going on with Ragnow and Decker. All we have done to address that is Sorstal and Manu. Oh, well, I mean, Mahogany. But we're basing a lot on Sorstal and Manu to one small school. One is CFL, and we are banking on them to be the future, because if they're not hitting by next year, and like say worst case scenario happens, we're suddenly very short on the offensive line, and we're going to have to go out of house to start getting guys, or we're going to have to start picking guys quite high. I don't like the investment that's been made on the offensive line outside of Mahogany. I think Mahogany's fantastic, and with Ryan, it saved day three big time, him being there, because it's given us a legitimate part going forward. But I don't like how the build has been done otherwise. Receivers, we're going to lack depth on there now. I would have liked a receiver in there to flesh out the room. Same with safety. I don't know what's going on with Vione, but that doesn't feel like a long-term fix. And I still think we're going to go... For me, this says we're going to go free agency. And we're going to get a big free agency going out, because we need to, unless Branch is transferring back there. There's still a lot of uncertainty at the safety position if Kirby and if he don't work out this year. It feels like there are a lot of potential issues that could be on this team sooner rather than later, and they have not been addressed by this draft. But we don't draft for need. We draft the right players, so I'm not going to attack them for that. They've got the guys who they think are right, so we'll see on it going forward, but in terms of some of these positional groups, I don't like the future plan for them as of now. And we'll just have to wait and see.
Yeah, like, I like the double dip at corner overall for the draft. But yeah, I've been banging on for months now. We need a proper X receiver. And we didn't get one, which suggests we're going to free agency, but there's not a lot in free agency. There's a lot of old guys that can do it. Alan Robinson, DJ Chark.
Ugh,
not
no.
exactly inspiring confidence, really, is it? So it might be that we can scheme up again. Like, I know Josh Reynolds wasn't technically a true X, and we've managed to get away with that. Maybe it just needs to be more bent, scheming people open, right? I just want that big option. If it's removal of port out as an X receiver style kind of thing, out wide on those kind of things, and then we bring in Brock or whatever at tight end, that could work. I just wanted like a proper receiver, but hey ho. Yeah, look, I think with Varkey getting listed as a running back by the team and all his meetings being offensive, seems he's going there. So it means we're suggesting we're going for agency. Some better names there, obviously Justin Simmons, Quandre Diggs, Tracy, my God, there's people there. Probably going to cost us a bit though, and they're going to have to love the spot. So it's not really mismatched, but got some offensive line pieces. Yes, might have been better to get someone who's a bit more short offensive tackle. And then we've got a DT, which I've been saying we needed, would prefer someone else, but at least we met that kind of need. We've got someone else on the defensive line just to give us another weapon. But it's as best as we can do. There were similar things said last year, kind of, with obviously, as I think it was Roy mentioned earlier, if you rearrange some of the picks, it looks a lot better. We said that last year and it kind of paid off. Gibbs has been amazing. Campbell, we'll give a pass too, because obviously he's been moved around as a salmon that. So hopefully this year, solidifying the linebacker, that can work out. Branch has been amazing. Hooker was obviously taken with the future in mind. Project Martin. Manu was probably the Roger Martin of this class, where it is. We're going to have to wait to see at the end of the rookie contract to see how well that turned out, especially since we traded up for him as well. But again, I trust Brad. If he thinks that all these guys can work out and are going to be good fits for us and they can contribute for us in some way or another this year, even if it's Manu playing on the field goal unit, let's say, for his first year while we get to work with him, it can work out. We just got to wait and see. But right now, yeah, B class, like B plus.
So I think this is all about philosophy for me, and I hear Ant's concerns about lack of investment in key positions for the future, and I definitely think that that could potentially be an issue. However, there's only so many picks, and there's more problems than there are picks. So I think somewhere is going to get some underinvestment, and the key position for me, which prevented us from going all the way, was corner. It was a short-term and long-term need. And I think what this class does is it bridges the gap between short-term and long-term need. This is a class built to win the Super Bowl in 2024/25. If we hit with these guys, this might be the best roster in the NFL because of where we've invested. Now, we may not get that hit, or only some may be that hit. But we've only got to get one out of two of the corners, hopefully with Carlton Davis being the other one and Branch being the nickel. And if we get two hits and Branch ends up being the safety, even better. This is a team built to win now, but because of those investments, those are going to work out for the next few years in positions where we need them next year anyway. So it means that you're changing where you need to invest for 2025, and it also means you need to walk a little bit of a tightrope in some positions. But we'd be saying about corner if instead of the corners, we took higher rounds in offensive linemen. So it's the same conversation in a different position. And I'm absolutely delighted that it's corner that they invested in, because my God, we can't do that again. We can't be 31st in the NFL in terms of receiving touchdowns allowed. Like that cannot be allowed to happen for a team that's meant to be winning today. Like, we didn't think the window was going to be open last year. We certainly were going into this season hoping the window might be opening if we can do our best. But we are firmly in our window. That doesn't mean it has to close after this class. But I commend Brad on, I think, walking the tightrope in the right way this season. It's going to be tough. And if we get a key injury, it's going to suck. But that's true for every season. You can't have 53 men who should all start. I think he's done an absolutely smashing job of taking the right amount of projects with a huge amount of upside and high ceiling, high floor players right at the top. All right, we'll just move on briefly to talk about the UDFA class, although we'll do an entire show on them. So just a brief thought about the class and then about how the rest of the NFC North did. We've been going on a while, so I'll try and keep this brief. But our UDFAs so far, I mean, we're still signing people. The kicker that I'm about to mention, we signed about 90 minutes ago, so it's still all coming in. So far we have, let me count, I didn't count this, 4, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. We normally get 15 to 16, so this may be the class complete. We'll find out shortly. Two centers with Brian Hudson from Louisville and Duke Clemens from UCLA. Two wide receivers, Isaiah Williams from Illinois, who's got a big guaranteed contract of about $300,000 or so, and Jalon Calhoun from Duke. Tight end Isaac Rex from BYU are your offensive players. And then on defense, we've got two edges in Isaac Ukwu from Ole Miss and Nate Lynn from William & Mary. Two linebackers, Steel Chambers from Ohio State, and a linebacker safety hybrid, Daron Gilbert from Northern Illinois. DBs in corner, Maurice Norris, I'm not sure, from Fresno State, and Lauren Strickland from Ball State, and the safety, Chellen Garnes from Wake Forest, who may be the most shredded person I've ever seen in my life. Long snapper Hogan Hatton from Idaho, who I know that will profile on his own entire show on the offseason, I'm sure. Fuck my life. And kicker James Turner from Michigan, who, as I just mentioned, we have only just signed. Boys, we'll dedicate an entire show to this, but just general thoughts on any of the players here. Have you seen any of these guys? Have you got any thoughts on what some of these guys might bring? Who might make the roster? I mean, it's always a struggle, and our team's a lot better now than it has been in recent years.
Can we talk about the long snapper?
Go on.
The long,
I don't know receivers are like 5'9".
How many times have you heard of a long snapper who has a safety to his name? Like, that's impressive. And that probably gave Ash fits. He's got a blocked field goal. Is it a blocked field goal and a safety? Yeah, so this guy is in Superman. Like, Idaho put out a tweet saying long snapper extraordinaire. Like, this man is a god. I mean, they're to be had. So, like, yeah. Long snapper who has a safety to his name. Great. I'll be proper now because Matt's about to shoot himself. Isaac Rex could make this team.
Yeah.
Isaac Rex is a bloody good football player, and he's nasty. Like, you want a run-blocking guy, he's as nasty as they come, and he's heavily underutilized as a receiver. You haven't begun to see his skills as a receiver yet in full flow. So, like, he's the one right now. You're putting, even with what's-his-face getting all the guaranteed money, Isaac Rex is the name that is most likely to make this roster. I think he will do. He's a great player.
Isaiah Williams won't make a roster. We give him all the guaranteed money. It's just not what we're looking for. He's just a slot guy. And I read that to a returner. Fumbles. Ball scooter's not great, so yeah. See, and the kicker, 3 years at Louisville, I don't think he made anything over 50. I don't think he's got anything that we don't currently have in the Money Badger. I know people are great, love it because he's Michigan. But yeah, he's a camp body. He's not special. Everyone's saying, oh, we're just burning time until Jay Bates. There's a lot of guys I wanted. It's none of these. I saw Garrett Greenfield go UDFA and that really hurt. Like, he's only got loaded of guaranteed money. Like, that's a project defensive tackle, but yeah. As you say, Isaac Rex for me is probably the lone standout of that. One I know of, and two I think could actually make a roster because he's very well-rounded and I think he can compete with Brock Wright. The rest of the guys, we will see how many of them end up on the practice squad. Jalen Calhoun, I like him, and he's been very productive with the Duke Blue Devils. He's also just a bit, he's small. He can only play in the slot, really. But he has been very good at what he does. So he will be definitely someone to keep around. Definitely, if you don't make a roster, keep him on the practice squad. Because like I say, he's got like 40 catches and like 600 yards nearly every year. He's been a pretty focal point of, he was there in the bad years. He's been on some crap Duke teams. That says a lot to his testament to staying there for four or five years, because no one else in their sane mind would have done that. They were shit 3 years ago. They were awful 4 years ago. They were okay 2 years ago, but he stuck it out. That says a lot about him, and I like him.
Yeah, so there's two that really stand out to me. One, for special teams, that'll be, and also because the name, he's an instant POD name, bracket favourite, Steel Chambers. If you, like me, like Anthony Pittman, who remember had the most special team snaps of the team over the past 3 years before he left for worst places in Washington, this is your replacement. And then at edge, Nate Lynn, who I looked into a bit when I saw we had a top 30 visit with him. This is, again, he is of the mold of like Kamish, Pascal, but was very productive at William Mary. And as we know from last year with us taking Colby, we look at that brain, we look at that school quite heavily. We value players from there. And he was a team captain and all that. So he could be practice squadder. And then if and when Kamish goes, if we don't really have someone there, maybe he can come in, be Pascal's backup at that sort of big end range. But yeah, everyone else kind of, you know, like I obviously knew Calhoun, he was one of the first ones we signed. I was like, oh yeah, I know this guy, good slot guy, good on special teams, but do we really need him? I don't know.
Steel Chambers should be a safety. I think he will move back from linebacker because he's okay in coverage. But yeah, I think he will be a primary special teamer. I think he might make the team because of that, because we value that.
I mean, if we're looking at players who actually have roots to the roster, Rex makes sense because with the change in the rules, tight ends can have an additional focus. He's going to be up against the receiving tight end that we have who was injured for James last Mitchell. Year. Not the, that one, the other one.
Shane Ilstra.
That's the one, Shane Ilstra. So I think that'll be a straight fight between them two for a position on the 53. We need a backup centre on the roster, so I think Hudson and Clemens can fight that out. We don't have another one, I don't think. I mean, Graham's in as a starter, and I'd rather not flex anyone else out so that he can move into centre. So I think that maybe Clemens has a really good shot at that, but I think both are reasonable guys in there. There could be a position for an edge in there. I mean, they clearly don't like James Houston as much as the public like James Houston. I mean, he's still on the roster, but when you're wrapping with a third team at the end of at the start of last year, and then you come back from injury and you're just not quite ready going into year three now, I think his position's potentially at risk. So we'll see what happens. I don't want it to be. I think it's fantastic, but there's a route to the roster there. Safety, we need some backup there. So Chelangans might have a route, and obviously long snapper and kicker, for obvious reasons, are just an easy competition to be had. So I think those all have upside to make it. Let's briefly talk about day three for our rivals in the NFC North. We had the Bears going punter at 122, Torrey Taylor from Iowa, and the defensive end from Kansas, Austin Booker, at 144. Boys, Bears, thoughts? I mean, if you have a look at any ranking out there, you would be fooled into thinking the Bears have had the best draft of any team in the 2024 NFL draft.
Punter in the fourth is funny. And Austin Booker's good, but he's had one good year of production in college and that's it. Like, I think they went a little bit reachy here. Because they had to give up future draft picks to come back in for Booker. So their day three was poor.
Got best punter in the country, but a fourth round pick is too rich for even the best punter in the country. And then, yeah, Austin Booker, like you say, big, good frame, 1 year of side production. Would have been there later, probably. It could turn out to be a great player, but for me, when I look at that team, I just don't see him making an impact anytime soon. Like, their D-line looks pretty strong, and they've invested in it in future recent years. So, yeah, it's okay, but yeah, it's nothing to write home about.
Yeah, so I remember the reaction when that pick was announced, because it was the one as well who was announced by that Bears fan who was absolutely winding everyone up. So it was like us bringing him to us, everyone bursting out laughing for them taking a punter that high. Like, yes, he might be the best punter prospect in existence, but doesn't justify that high of a pick. And I respect the Bears, at least, that as much as they've taken Kerry Williams and Adunze and all that, they're preparing for the fact that their offense might still implode and they might need to punt a lot. So they're making sure they've at least got that sorted as well. And yeah, with Booker, a lot of production, not a lot of athleticism. So yeah, the Bears' edge room is that weak. They can probably be a starter for them, even being picked that late, but not much upside there for me, unfortunately.
All right, cheers for being on, Ryan. See you soon, mate.
See you for that, guys. Bye.
All right, moving on to the Packers. They were active. They had, I think, the most picks of the day, although it didn't end up that being that way because of trades. Starting off with 111, the safety Evan Williams from Oregon. 163, the offensive lineman Jacob Monk from Duke. 169, the safety Kitan Oladapo from Oregon State. 202, the tackle Travis Glover from Georgia State, and 245, quarterback Michael Pratt from Tulane, who had, I think, potentially the biggest fall from the consensus board position to actual draft position of anyone in the 2024 NFL draft. And what did he make of this third day class for the Packers?
The last three picks saved it for them. Like, Evan Williams, for me, was drafted way too high. I don't think much to him and what he's about. Jacob Monk, yeah, fine. But when you saw the stack of centers and that still left on the board at the time, that was a reach. There were far better guys on the board at that point. But then you go back and, like, Kitan Oladapo, like, Swiss Army knife safety. The way they play, the way they utilize their DBs, he's going to fit in very easily there. Like, he's not one you might see right away, but he's like one in like 18 months' time. He's there, you're like, oh, I forgot they had him. And all of a sudden, he's going to come in with a big bang, and he's going to make his presence known. I love that. Travis Glover, I like adore. He was one of the trough of day three guys I had. But, like, Travis Glover is, he's such an easy guy to like. He's got a great story behind him, but he has been great on that blind side for Georgia State. He is a big man who can move like big men shouldn't move. like in the run game, the way they play the style, because they're not afraid to take these guys. I mean, they got Rasheed Wallace playing left tackle for them. He was a pick in the 200s. He's doing well there. I fully expect Travis Glover to get on that line and to make that team and to be a starter there in a year or two. Again, he's one you might forget they have him initially, but then he'll make his way into the team and he'll not look back. Like, those were two picks. Those are development picks who in 12 months are really going to start paying off for you. And Pratt, again, I really like Michael Pratt. Yeah, he's a little bit older, but I never understood the knocks on him coming into this draft. I know it was his age that was a thing with him, but like, he's been amazing for the Green Wave. They've been one of the most fun teams to watch on offense these last couple of years. He's going to be a very good backup in the NFL, and he can come in and win you games when developed. I mean, obviously, that pick for Sean Clifford's even more funnier last year now because they've already given up on him. Like, you don't make this pick if you believe in Sean Clifford. Sean Clifford's going to be playing CFL this time next year. He's done. But I think that Michael Pratt's a very good development QB option for them. So, first two, the trouble is when you've got so many picks, you kind of just start throwing names at a dartboard and you get guys off that are very good. But those last three, like, I expect to see Oladapo and Glover in that team in 12 months, and I expect them to be really damn good.
Yeah, so the trade-up for Evan Williams is the only real contender for me, with the Panthers trading up back up into the first round for Xavier Leggett for the I woke up without my bra and my dignity worst trade of the draft award. So what the hell was that trade-up for them? Monk, yeah. Off, like, decentish offensive line. We know what the Packers can do with offensive line, so he could turn out and be the next great center, and I won't be too surprised. But again, there were other guys there available on offensive line that were a lot better. And then we get to the ones that kind of made me feel like, oh god, here we go. But Oladapo, I loved in this process, and I'm so annoyed that we have to go up against him twice a year now with that bloody team. Like, yeah, he's going to fit so well into that, like, their defense. They kind of need him. I know they signed Xavier McKinney this offseason, but putting him next to him, that's a damn good safety room. Glover, I don't know too much about. I remember him being mentioned a couple of weeks ago on our Discord, and I liked the tools kind of thing. He could turn out really well for them, as you said, because, again, they develop offensive linemen like nothing. And then Pratt, he's going to be a good backup for them. If they need to cut him to come in and play a couple of games because Love's got injured, he should have to stabilise them. But yeah, it's one of them. But they had a decentish draft. But yeah, that sort of the start of day three stuff kind of drops it a bit.
Yeah, you guys have covered this one really well. I don't have anything else to add on those guys, so I'll go straight into the Vikings, who had less picks than the Packers going in, but they actually ended up picking five times like the Packers did. They started at 108. In the run of Oregon players that came off of the board at the start of day three, with the cornerback Kyrie Jackson from Oregon at 177, so they had a good weight. They took the tackle Walter Rouse, thank you, from Oklahoma. 203, they got into special teams by taking kicker Will Reichard from Alabama. 230 was the offensive lineman Michael Juergens from Wake Forest. And then 232, what we believe to be Project X from The Athletic, the cousin of Dan Campbell? No.
So the head coach of Texas A&M, your commerce is Dan Campbell's cousin.
Thank you. Defensive lineman Levi Drake Rodriguez from Texas A&M University Commerce. So, Anne, it's... what do you think?
I can very succinctly put this. Who, great kicker, who. That is my thing for this, like... Walter Rouse is a statue at tackle. Like, picking an Oklahoma tackle this year was like picking up a live grenade, not knowing how much time you've got before it blows your hand off. They're both going to hurt you. Like, they're going to, you know, one side of you is going to be completely defenseless. Like, they're both rubbish. I just don't think either of them. I mean, as for Kyrie Jackson, mate, fine, but we know doesn't matter what corner the Vikings pick, Amon-Ra's going to cook them to a well done steak level. So fine, whatever with it. Michael Juergens, I must admit, I don't really know anything about, and A&M Commerce. The only reason I know A&M Commerce exists is because they were on the college show once this year because they had a 10-9 defeat against Old Dominion, which appeared on the near upsets list. I'd never heard of them before that. I thought I was getting punked when trying to find out who they were. But TAMUCOM is one of my favorite abbreviations for a team. If I was saying I know anything about TAMUCOM draft prospects, then call me out as a liar. Nobody does. I think they're second division, so I don't know a goddamn thing about them. So it is a who. Who?
Well, I can answer that who, because as you said, with 99.9% certainty believe he is prospect X from The Athletic, which means I know a damn lot about this kid now, because I was like, it seems such a Dan Campbell guy. So very, very good detail. And as you said, they recently just came up from 2 DFBS from Div 2. Their head coach, who started last year, did his first year, Dan Campbell's cousin, and Levi Drake Rodriguez, damn good player. Like, I was hoping we'd keep one of our later picks so we could get him. And I can recall the exact moment the Vikings took him, because me and Matt were in buddies in Detroit having a nice Detroit-style pizza. And I'm like, oh, yeah, if I'm Brad Holmes, I'll be onto his phone to his agent right now, offering whatever he can to get into camp. I look up to the TV and the Vikings select him. Broke my heart. Really broke my heart. This is like, I know I didn't like the Mickey Wingo pick, but even then, I was still willing to sort of double down in a way and put this guy as a priority UDFA, because he would have been a damn good fit here. Like, he was listed at TAMUCOM at about 280, 290. He weighed in for his pro day at 310, 315. This is a guy who, in that space of time, put in the work to get up to an NFL level weight to maybe boost his chance of getting drafted. And it obviously worked, because the Vikings have got him. And while I have complete faith that our offensive line will negate him, it's going to be fun to see him wreck over offensive linemen. As for Juergens, same kind of level of tier as that Jacob Monk that the Packers took. Could be a good backup lineman for them. Probably is never going to start. Obviously, everyone knows Will Warrycott, because we're all wanting kicker in the draft or in UDFA. So they got him. Well done. Rowles, yep. Oklahoma tackle, instantly bad. Just have to remember us FSU beats and give him the Cheez-It Bowl to know how bad he was. And yeah, Kyrie Jackson, your typical big, lengthy, athletic Oregon corner, could work out for them. But yeah, he's not going to do well against our receivers, hopefully. Like, he might do well against some of the others, like Christian Watson. That's going to be a fun matchup, because they've both got similar body types. That'd be a good ding-dong battle to watch. But other than that, I don't have much faith for any Vikings corners these days.
At the end of the day, the Vikings draft was saved by getting one of the top four quarterbacks without having to move from 11 and 23. That's the saving grace for them, because day three is just an absolute flat-out disaster. I'm sorry, but this is a bunch of nothing. Oh, I'm sorry, your best pick is a kicker. Well done. Congratulations, D. Move on. Don't like it. Anyway, let's crack on with just shouting out maybe the best team's draft and worst team's draft. I don't know if you had any classes that you particularly really liked or really didn't like. Maybe we'll exclude Atlanta from this, because it just seems too easy to have a go at Michael Penix at 8. But if you want to go there, feel free. But Ant, did you have anyone in mind for best and worst draft classes?
So instantly the best one was the Steelers, and I don't think it's particularly close at this point. Like, that entire thing, you got Faltano, Frazier and McCormick for your line, who are going to absolutely kick people into tomorrow. You got Roman Wilson from Michigan. Yeah, I mean, you know what Michigan's about. Like, their receivers, they'll kick your ass. They got Peyton Wilson at 80, and like, I know Peyton Wilson inside out, leader. You know, so much you can do with him. Like, he's going to fit into that. He's going to be like Alex Highsmith and guys like that on there. He's going to be the next one of them. And then even you're going on to day three, like Logan Lee they got from Iowa. And I think they got good. I didn't think he was one of the premier DTs in this class, but at 200, perfect value. Like, great against the run, ass kicker. Like, that entire class screams, we're going to kick your ass. It's Steelers mentality, and it finally feels, for the first time in a long time, like they nailed their needs. Like, they have avoided offensive line for a long time, but they not only doubled down, they tripled down. And I love all those three guys. Fautanu at 20 is a steal. Like, Frazier made me feel better because I mocked them a centre in on my round one mock. So I'm like, well, no, they did want a centre. They got Zach Frazier at 40 or whatever. Like, the Steelers absolutely knocked it out the park. Love theirs. And the other one I particularly love that I can remember off my bat was the Chargers as well. And I don't know whether it's because I kind of like these two teams draft like us. But Harbaugh, he did a tremendous job in getting, like, Joe Alt said he was going to pick Joe Alt. Like, Joe Alt, Rashawn Slater, those two bookending for the next 10 years is going to be absolutely crazy. They've just picked up his fifth year option. Like, they're going to run over you with those two guys. They're hopefully going to protect Herbert some more. But then you've got Junior Colson, who they brought in, who he obviously knows very well from Michigan. Great coverage linebacker. Going to go well with Diane Henley. They've invested so much there. Ladd McConkey, Kamani Vidal, running back from Troy, I absolutely adored. He brought in Cornelius Johnson as well. That, again, that's Harbaugh football. He's going to bring in, was Tahib Stilley got as well. These are big guys who are going to kick your ass, who are going to put a hurting on you. And, like, he made, it didn't take him any time whatsoever to start getting his guys. But in terms of the guys they got, the value they got for them, those two really stood out for me. I'll have a look through the others, but Steelers absolutely killed it. They were amazing.
Wow. It won't shock people to guess who my favourite draft class was, excluding ones you've mentioned.
I know. The Los Angeles Seminoles.
Yes, exactly. Like,
it's not going to be
what a great fit. He's going to start for them. And in getting Fisk to replace Donald on that defensive line, him and Kobe Turner, great interior duo. Then sniping Corum from out the hands of the Chargers as well. Like, the only pick of theirs that I don't really like is Cam Kitchens out of Miami, because athletic, one of those highly productive, like, guys that's mocked in the first, start of the year, just fallen for the right reasons. Like, everyone else, I love Brennan Jackson. I had a bit of a crush on, for us, as like a sort of Sam guy for us later on. Tyler Davis, I mentioned earlier, as a potential guy who could have took over Wingo. Joshua Carty seemingly was our kicker one. We had him in for a pre-draft visit. He's a good kicker. Jordan Whittington, I don't know too much about. He's obviously, evidently, Texas's wide receiver three, but at 213, with Cup getting on there and them needing a bit of a cheaper receiver room, don't mind that. And then getting two interior guys later on with Boo Limmer and Katie Leveson, who they'll move inside from Kansas State. He was obviously their left tackle, but was too big to play there, so they move inside at guard. They've now got some cheap backups to all those interior offensive line pieces they got in free agency, so I absolutely love their class. And as for the worst class, so my personal winner for the shame of a thousand whores worst draft class is the Carolina Panthers, obviously trading up for Xavier Leggett, who was overdrafted by them by far, shouldn't have gone that high. Buffalo proved that with the pick later, getting Keon, much better player, actually worth a first round talent. Jonathan Brooks isn't too bad of a pick, but like Trayvon Wallace, okay, would have been good. He's a good linebacker, more of a day three guy. Don't like Sanders at all at tight end. I just think he's the glorified Eric Ebron. Chal Smith-Wade could be okay. Kamundi would be an okay-ish nose tackle, but that's all he's ever going to be. And then Michael Barrett, as much as you're probably paying Michigan fans to hear, there's a reason he stayed in college so long. He'll be a point-and-shoot linebacker. You put him in on rundowns, maybe play some special teams, but other than that, not much else there. Like, so they're the worst draft for me. But of course, I'll end up 12 months time if Leggett turns out to be the next coming of a great receiver, Brooks absolutely tears it apart, and like Sanders actually does stuff, I'll hang my hands up and say well done. But right now I just have no faith in that organization whatsoever.
I'm trying to decide between three classes that you haven't already mentioned that I really, really like. And
I've got two more, but I'll let you do
that. All right, I'll pick one, and then we'll see if the other two we have, if it's not that one, are the same. I'm going to go with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So you pick you know, late in the first round because you unexpectedly did well, and that's going to really hamper you going forward because your team just isn't that good. And then you end up with an advert coming up, so I can't see the glass. Getting Graham Barton at 26, you get Chris Boswell at 57, who I think could have gone higher. Even though I think he's like a rotational piece, he's still a good player in that rotational area. He's quite a polished edge rusher. It's just that he's never been able to do it over a full workload, but I think he could get there. Tyke Smith at 89, I think it's fantastic value. Obviously, he's been at Georgia for quite a long time now, but I think he's a very solid high floor, maybe not so high ceiling. But if you're getting that at 89 as a safety, absolutely fine. Jalen McMillan might be the steal of the draft at 92. I mean, he's got really, really high ceiling, very fast. I know that he was the third guy at Washington, but maybe they were just holding him back a little bit. I think Bucky Irving from Oregon, the running back at 125, has a really high ceiling at running back. I think that he can hit the ground running really, really well. The other guys late on day three, I don't really know a lot about, but those first five picks I really, really love. And I've got two tabs open in front of me, and I'd want you to give your notable mentions to that, and then I'll go into my worst draft class in just a second.
Yeah, I'll do my worst ones in a minute as well. But the other two ones I liked. So, and I don't really say many nice things about them. So this is a different approach for me.
Oh.
But the Buffalo Bills,
Ooh.
I
Okay.
really like the Bills draft. So obviously, Keelan Coleman, I should tell you about him nice and early on. But they traded down, got some picks to get him there. Cole Bishop, I adore. Cole Bishop is going to be a tremendous player in Buffalo there. But then it's kind of the middle here where I like, so Ray Davis, I think, is a fantastic pick for them. I've been saying for years and years and years, they need a home hit runner running back, and Ray Davis is potentially that. Vastly underrated. Should have been gone before this, but great for them. But then they've got the little group on day three. They've got Edifuan Olufosio, Javon Solomon, and Tylan Grable, and they're like some of my favorite players out of this entire process. Grable is Javon Solomon, sure as hell is, and he's playing with Von Miller, he's playing with Russo. He is in a perfect room to develop. He can be a situational pass rusher to start with, learn his trade, and he's got like Pro Bowl potential on that team. I think he's going to be amazing. Same with Grable. Like, I've made no bones about how much I love Tylan Grable. I think he's going to be amazing there. Olufosio is a tackling machine. The Bills are light with their linebackers. Milano's getting on, etc. They're going to need that next generation of guy to come in. He will tackle for days. He's very versatile, and he'll fit into that system as well. So I just want to say to the Bills, very well done. I think they got Van Pran as well, and I don't mind Van Pran. The other one I really liked, and this is the future draft. This is not the one I like now. It's the future draft, and that's the Colts. So I love the Colts draft as well. So Latu at 15, that's a risk. But if he stays injury free, that 15 is just going to be insanely good value for him. But it's about guys for the future. So again, AD Mitchell at 52 was ridiculously good value early on, but I'm looking for the future. So Matt Goncalves is there, like development tackle, great. Tanner Bortolini is going to be there. I think he's going to be a starter sooner rather than later on that team. Anthony Gould, he's the return specialist. A lot of upside as a receiver, but again, it's a development guy. And then you've got the DBs, Jalon Carley's safety. He's a Mizzou guy. Liked him last year. Had a bit of a trouble this year, but I think develop-wise, he's going to do very well. And then they pick Mykah Abraham. And like Abraham was the cornerback from Marshall. I liked him last year. He was like one of the day three guys I want if they did come here. Again, I think he's going to work really well. Like, all these are development guys, but if they work out, then in a few years' time, I'm going to look at them and go, sake, I wanted a lot of those guys. And I think they've picked a great class for the future. So that's like the future draft, not the now draft, the future draft. I really like the Colts.
Did you have any honorable mentions?
Yes, and it's the one you've currently got on your tab, so you can take
No,
it.
you take it, and I'll have my other one.
So the one I also really liked, and it's for some obvious reasons, the Eagles. Q was what CB1, getting him at 22, obviously with all the offensive talent going earlier. Great pick. They needed to get younger at corner with Slay and James Bradbury. I wouldn't be surprised if by the end of the year, Q's starting over James Bradbury. Great pick. It's going up in front of the Packers to get Cooper DeJean. Listed corner back, but if it doesn't work out, they can put him at safety, and they've got a potentially like elite safety prospect for them. Jalix Hunt, Rich get rich on the defensive line. Some of their edge rushers are getting a bit older. He can develop, and he could potentially be a great edge rusher for them. Will Shipley, really good running back. Obviously, I know a lot about him because he's from Clemson. Aeneas Smith, great name, obviously, for obvious reasons. So I love that. But he could be a good, like, receiver 4 or 5 for them. Jeremiah Trotter, they need to, their linebacker room is probably weak. It's their weakest part of the defense. So getting him in, keep bringing him home, because obviously his dad played there. He could have some upside. Trevor Keegan, okay, yeah, doesn't have great upside, but he could be a solid floor for them. Obviously got Johnny, who I love to bits, and God damn it, there's the perfect AJ Brown backup for them. And then I know you were, even though he's a wolf, member of the Wolfpack, you weren't so high on him, but Dylan McManaman, there's a good backup centre for them. I know obviously with Kelsey going, they're sliding over Cam Jurgens, there's their centre too. But other than that, I like, it's a good all-round class. They've bought themselves a floor, and then they've got some pieces, some real upside for them, which they kind of need now as they're sort of exiting their Super Bowl window. Everyone's getting a bit old and expensive. They're starting to reload now, so hopefully in a couple of, well, not hopefully, but in a couple of years, they can hope they can be back to what they were a few years ago.
Yeah, I had the Eagles up as well, as Ash mentioned, and just in briefly, it, like us, is a class which is built to win now and win later, and I absolutely hate it. Every single pick makes sense. Even the guys late are solid backup options day one. They may never be starters, but if they get any key injury, they're not going to be complete liabilities, and that's great for Philly, which is frustrating for everyone else in the NFC who wants to get beyond them and San Francisco, because, you know, just because they were poor last year, Philly down the stretch, I mean, but that roster is still super powerful. I know they're high in the power rankings, they don't deserve to be there on last year's performance, but in terms of personnel, it's just about making it gel, because I think all the pieces are there for them to make a run. The team that I have, and I say this saying that I do not like their first round pick massively, I understand it, and I think there is room for it to be right, but it's about the rest of it after pick number 2, which is the Washington Commanders. Jaden Daniels is not my second quarterback. Having said that, how well he played last year, like I can't be completely solid in my evaluation of him. If he came out day one and was just fantastic, it wouldn't surprise me. But after that, you get Jazar Newton at the 36. You get Mike Samra-Stewart at 50. You get Benson at a bit too high, the tight end at 53, but I still like him as a prospect. Brandon Coleman, I think, is going to be a reasonable guard prospect. Luke McCaffrey at 100. Jordan McGee from Temple, the linebacker. Dominic Hampton. And then Javonte Jean-Baptiste. I just think that's a very solid class for a rebuilding Washington team. I mean, Newton and Samra-Stewart just really stand out as really good value players for me, who are going to be like tone setters for that defense, who, I mean, they've hemorrhaged talent, haven't they, on the defensive side of the ball. You know, you used to look at that defensive line and say, you got 4 first round picks on that line. Now suddenly you have maybe 1, maybe 2. I can't exactly remember right now, but they've rebuilt that a little bit with Newton, and then Samra-Stewart is just going to put the hammer down on people, and he's going to be a really great pick. So Daniels, I'm like, but I like the rest of it very, very much. And we both haven't said the one that we dislike. So do you want to say yours, and then I'll give you a thumbs up if it's the same as mine? I think it will be the same, by the way.
Well, so I have an actual one I dislike, but I have an honourable they can go suck a duck draft.
Okay. What's the one you don't like?
I know the suck a duck one.
the can go suck a duck draft is the Seahawks. They can go suck a duck because not only did they take Christian Haynes, they took Tyrese Knight as well. They took Nehemiah Pritchett. Stop picking my favorite players, Seattle. I swear to God. Like, I, you know, if I did mock drafts for the Seattle Seahawks, I would get a lot of picks right. But yeah, I hate them, so yeah. But you do yours, and then I'll do my actual one that I think sucks.
The draft that I think sucks, and it's not to say they haven't picked players I don't like, but overall, the team that basically hasn't made their team any better at all is the Miami Dolphins. They picked Chop Robinson at 21. And I hear the people who are saying yes, but with him. And it's like, no, I just don't agree. I'm sorry. I don't see it. That one first step is elite. Why does every quarterback manage to know that you're coming and throw it before you hit him? Like, your production just isn't there. And at 21, like, come on. I know that you have a need for a backup edge. You don't take a backup edge at 21, no matter how fast his first step is. Like, yes, maybe he gets trained up. And you know, Jalen Phillips, I actually think, will be a good mentor for him, because I think Phillips is basically the opposite of him in terms of being very polished with his pass rush moves, but just can't stay healthy. If Phillips can train up Robinson, it could be a good pick. But right now, it's a pick with upside in a position where really I didn't think there was any room to do that. Patrick Poole at 55, who was telling everyone he was going to be a first-round pick pre-draft, he's an okay pick. But I don't think that he was a mid-second rounder. I wouldn't have taken him there. I think he was at best a mid-third for me. I just don't see it. Development piece once again. So your first two picks, not projected starters for me. Jalen Wright, running back Tennessee, speed merchant, 120 overall. I'm not going to complain, but at the same time, these guys are a dime a dozen in the NFL. You can always find someone who can just be the home run hitter. Can he play on third down? I'm not entirely sure. I don't think his pass pro is actually up to scratch, potentially. We'll see, but you're looking at a guy that maybe you can only have on two downs, and they're already pretty strong at running back anyway. Talk about, you know, redundancy. I mean, they have invested heavily in people like that already. So, redundant pick. Mo Camara, I actually like. Well done. You took an edge that I actually like in a position where it's okay to be a backup from Colorado, say at 158. But you took Chop Robinson. What's the point in this? Like, you've already taken the backup edge. That makes no sense. And then, okay, I like Malik Washington and I like Taj Washington, but you picked both of them. And then Patrick McMorris, the safety from Cal, I can't pretend to know. But this is a draft either which has players I like but are redundant, or players I don't like at the top. Like, you fucks it. Like, E, and maybe that's a bit strong. Who's yours?
So I'm going against consensus here, because everyone said this was amazing, but I think the Super Bowl champions had a rubbish draft. I think the Chiefs had a terrible, terrible draft. Now, Worthy was good. Like, Worthy's going to be very good in that team. Let's not get that wrong. But after that, it falls off a cliff. So Amataya, I've been very outspoken in my criticism of him. He is not what I thought he was going to be. I don't think he's going to be good there. I don't think he's going to be good in the NFL, full stop. Then you reach on Jared Wiley. There were better tight ends in that situation. And then it just goes underground. So Jaden Hicks, I like. He's all right at 133, but you don't need him. You don't really need him on that team. You got Joshua Williams there to do what he does, but he might be all right. But then you got Hunter Nozad, who's useless as a center. Kamal Haddon is terrible. Like, the one redeeming feature is they went and got CJ Hansen, but he's a complete and utter development project. But he's from Holy Cross. He's a small school guy. Those are the guys who dropped to day three, and they're still worthy of that pick, and they could surpass their expectations. But I thought the Chiefs had a rotten draft. I don't like their draft at all. I think they're going to get one starter out of that, maybe Hansen in the long run. I think that's it. They have drafted poorly.
Yeah. Like, I love the CJ Hansen pick as well. Maybe I'm a bit higher than the Jaden Hicks one, because I do love Joshua Williams, and I think with Justin Reed getting on, as much as I love him as a safety slash kicker hybrid, great. They need to get young, because obviously he's there, but he's getting a bit on. Maybe Hicks can be the replacement for that. But yeah, for the most part, I didn't like the trade up for Worthy. I think the Bills absolutely smashed day one by trading back twice with teams who receive a needy and still getting their guy at the start of day two. So that factors in a bit of it. But yeah, I did not like the Chiefs draft at all, other than CJ Hansen, maybe Hicks.
All right, just to finish off, just going to list off some of the notable undrafted players. I presume they've all now been signed as undrafted free agents, and this is not a total list of all the UDFAs who are notable, just ones I picked out very quickly when I was preparing the show. But Edge, Gabriel Murphy, and I think both Murphy brothers actually went undrafted from UCLA. I think Murphy was ranked in the consensus board as a top 90 player, so that was a big fall from grace. Safety Bo Braid from Maryland. Cornerback Dwight McLaughlin from Arkansas, who I was really high on in the process, thought he might even go on day two. Defensive tackle Leonard Taylor III from Miami, who, I mean, I'm sure he was meant to be a first-round pick, but here we are undrafted. Tight ends Brevin Spanford from Minnesota, who some people really like for some reason, not for me, but again, he was meant to go, you know, potentially even high on day three. Dallin Holker from Colorado State, I know has been a podcast mentioned a few times as being a favorite of theirs, and he didn't go. Marcus Rosemary Jack Saint, the wide receiver from Georgia, got some love. We had a visit with him. He's been to other teams, didn't go. Running back Dajon Edwards from Georgia, I think, could do a really good job for someone as a kind of rotational piece. Dylan Johnson didn't go from Washington. I think that's maybe not a surprise, but it is a remarkable fall from grace. And then the guard, Garrett Greenfield from San Diego State. That was
South
a really...
Dakota State. That's,
thank you very much. Sorry, I put SDSU and then I said the wrong
bloody... You did what I did yesterday.
Dah! That was a surprise. And then defensive end Braden McGregor from Michigan, who... I don't really know him, but I heard a few times in the pre-draft process him being talked up as a really good kind of development day three edge that, you know, has been semi-productive in a Michigan team that obviously is stacked, but that he showed enough to get drafted and didn't. And I mean, guys, any discussions on any of these guys or any other guys you want to shout out who maybe deserve to be drafted or, you know, fell from grace and didn't?
I just want to say I'm fully... getting vindicated on that Leonard Taylor stuff. I said at the start of last year, dude was a bust. And I took a lot of tap on the stream. So they go, oh no, is it me? You know what you're talking about. He didn't even get drafted. Even I thought he'd get drafted. I thought he was terrible. But I feel fully vindicated now on that. Like, God knows. Like, he was the athletics traits guy. So, like, this dude is insanely athletic. He's great at DT. Someone will pick him for upside. Well, nobody picked him.
Yeah, and then one guy I want to mention, and yes, it's a homer pick again, but it's because I love the fit. Kalen DeLoach and getting signed by Tampa Bay, what a great fit for them. Like, they blitz a lot with their linebackers, and you just need to see the play he made against Clemson to see how good of a fit that is. Like, I'm very jealous of them. And then obviously there's some other guys that were favorites of the pod that went a bit undrafted. Obviously, key among them, and I'm stealing it from Ant a bit because it's an ex receiver, so I really wanted him. Joshua Cephas. Can't believe it. Well, yeah, all I'm glad for is that he got as much money as he could from the Carolina Panthers to go there. So at least he can go into training camp, get a lot of money. They eventually cut him because they're stupid, and then we can pick him up off the street and then actually use him properly.
Yeah, it's crazy. One thing I do want to say, though, very quickly, and I put this on there, like, there were a select group of players, none of whom were drafted, who should have been. And, you know, we had Gerald on the show not so long ago. Not one HBCU player got drafted in this draft, and that is absolutely disgusting. Sunday Arthur Anderson should have been drafted. Mikey Victor should have been drafted. Aneem Dankwa should have been drafted. These are terrific football players. And some of the dross that was getting taken off the board, people spending picks on them and not giving them to any of these guys, is, or that is 2 years in a row now, not a single guy has been picked. There is a two-time Super Bowl winner on the Kansas City Chiefs who came from there 3 years ago. 2 years ago, sorry. He's played 2 years in the NFL. He's got two chips. I don't know what it is with the NFL. I don't know what it is with the scouting process, but something is wrong. And I think it's absolutely atrocious that none of them got drafted. They should have all been picked, at least three or four of them. And it's just disgusting, and it just highlights the need. It's why we do the show with Gerald, to try and spread this awareness as much as possible, because the NFL's got a problem when it comes to the HBCUs, and it needs addressing. These guys shouldn't be going undrafted.
Yeah, I completely agree. Maybe not on all of the prospects, but on the sentiment behind it, like the fact that none of these guys are getting a look in is pretty remarkable, really, because some of them are going to be really good football players no matter whether they get drafted or not. But the fact that they go on to have good careers as undrafted players means that there is a gap in the process and something needs to change. So you need to continue going on your crusade to do that, and I commend you for it because we all need to start taking more attention for these guys. Right, anything more that we want to talk about before we sign off?
Congrats to Detroit for smashing holding the event. The only thing I had issue with is the way that getting into day two, the way he handled the over preparation, the over not over preparation, like the overflux of people watching, that could have been had a bit better. But other than that, smash the event. And if people were up here and you didn't try the peach cobbler cookies from that place on in the park, you missed out. Those were some damn good cookies, man.
I want to give one last big shout out when this is done, and this is something that's very close to my heart. Me and Ryan, before the draft, we did a Are We Smarter Than a Mock Draft Simulator challenge, and I'm happy to say that neither of us are dumber than a mock draft simulator, but I am more clever than the mock draft simulator by one. So my heart and all my love goes out to Jordan Travis for going
Oh,
to
you
the New York
absolute.
Jets, because Jordan Travis won me that event. I love him. He took one for the team. He's right now, he is sat in a room with Aaron Rodgers learning all about ayahuasca and how pigeons aren't real and stuff like that. And he did that for me. So thank you, Jordan Travis. I thank you from the bottom of my heart. You are a real one.
I love you, mate. That's
He was like, I nearly, he got picked on and nearly had a heart attack, glitching, leaning on that when that happened. The old guy behind me was like, we met there. Was like,
I
what the
saw
hell's
it
going on?
every time it came up. I was like, are they? And it happened, and I heard, well, I didn't hear it, but I felt the disturbance in the force from across the other line. I thought, oh God, he's gonna hate me now because I sent him there.
At least you can start next year.
Well, you know what? I feel horrified for him, but also Quantes Stiggers. Well done to Quantes Stiggers for
Yes.
getting drafted. But why the hell did they have to send him to that cesspit in New Jersey to spend his time with Aaron Rodgers? Like, he is a pure soul, and he is in with a corrupted leader now. Like, anywhere else would have been great, but Quantes Stiggers, you're a real one. That was a success story, and he rightfully got drafted. So well done to him.
You're a bastard, and I love you. All right. We are going to be back with the main podcast. And just to let you know what's coming up over the next few weeks, we are going to have some UDFA chat. We're obviously going to do a whole of draft in-depth review. So we've kind of talked about each day as we've gone. But just to go into the Detroit picks in more detail, that's going to necessitate a bit of tape work. I hope that and in the off season, once you've had your hiatus, that we're going to get to some rookie tape review stuff, which we have tried to get doing before, but we really should get doing now. There's a hole in the off season we've got to fill with this stuff, so I think it would be really, really good to do that. Otherwise, College Pod's on hiatus, but it will be back later on in the summer with the conference previews, I believe, Ant.
Yeah, they'll probably be 2 or 3 weeks, and I've already started them. So time waits for nobody. This draft is over, and now it's right on to the next generation of draft prospects now. So doing all this so you don't have to do it yourself.
And just finally, I just want to give a shout out, not generally to the people of Detroit, because I think we've done that already, and enough people have said enough good things about this city that to add my own thanks to them would be glib. I want to give a big shout out to the people that we've spent our time here with specifically. So Tiffany, who stayed with us in our digs for a few days, who became our guide around the city, to Ryan for getting us horrendously drunk on Monday to the point where I was questioning whether I was going to make it for the rest of the week. Well done to you for making the pick and doing us all proud back home. But also to the guys who ran the tailgate for us, who we met up with during the week, really kind of made this a once-in-a-lifetime thing for us. Actually, it's got me kind of thinking that I would love to do this again in other cities when the draft rolls around, if I have the time and money, that it has been a wonderful experience, and it's not just turning up to a city to watch picks being read out. Like, some people were like, why would you do this? And coming has absolutely cemented why it was worth doing. And it was an expensive endeavour, and it means that I am forfeiting my chance to go to a game this year. But it was absolutely worth it. If you came to say hi, if you're a fan of the show and you came to say hello to us several times as well, you know, to Floyd and to Austin, thank you. You're absolutely amazing. Hopefully we'll be back and we'll be able to get in touch again. I think we do need to run some fan things on the show as well on Zoom, because I think that that's well worth doing. The guys that we have supporting us and watching us have been absolutely fantastic. So I'll look at doing something like that in the off season too. Enough from me. You know where to find us on socials. I won't go into that. And I know that you were going to say something.
Yeah, very quickly on announcing draft picks and stuff. I just want to announce my candidacy for next year to go for International Fan of the Year, because I want to go up to Green Bay so I can announce a pick and talk all sorts of shit about them on the stage. And if you follow me on Twitter, you'll know I'm damn good at it. So let's get the campaign for that go. If you want to see me go on the stage in Green Bay and get chased out of town, do so, because I will do it and I will make it memorable. That is my pitch for International Fan of the Year. I'll hopefully get over for a game. I'll do that. I will fill all the other needs. You want me there talking rap to Green Bay. So I'm announcing my candidacy today.
Yeah, I can just hear you on the stage now going, the four-time NFL champion Detroit Lions. Like, all of that jazz at the end of it. It's going to be great. So, yes, I think you need to make up some sort of like Canva advertising and just pushing it out now. Your vote for, you know.
Exactly. I'm gonna run this like a presidential campaign. So
we got to win the primaries first. That's all I'm gonna say. You know, whoa. Might announce myself.
You got beat, Larry.
Oh, that's an in joke. There's a guy called Larry in Detroit who's put a poster of himself as a writing candidate for the presidential election. The vote for Larry thing. It's funny.
Is it kind of like Count Binface here?
Yes, I think he's going to do that thing.
I mentioned Count Binface, like Count Binface, because trying to explain to Tiffany like why are we laughing?
Yeah. For anyone who doesn't know who Count Binface is, just Google Count Binface. You'll see exactly what's happening. I've actually seen loads of stuff from him on TikTok recently because he's up for London Mayor. So, yeah. Anyway, enough chattering about nothing. Thank you for listening. Hope you've enjoyed all the draft stuff. We'll be back next week with a bit more of an in-depth roundup. But for now, let's go Lions One Pride.
Roll Pride.